celebrating 60 years of public media on the First Coast. Good morning and live from Five Points. This is First Coast Connect. We're on the go today, this morning, for the full hour. We are coming to you live. It's a special breakfast broadcast as we do the show today at Derbion Park. A big crowd here today. Good morning, everybody. So exciting to have everybody here in Five Points as we kick off today's big WJCT block party in the neighborhood. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for being with us as we say goodbye to summer and hello to fall with a big thank you party, a block party. Yeah, an old-fashioned block party for all of our listeners. And we're celebrating 60 years of public media in Jacksonville in Five Points today and tonight. We're going to tell you all about that during the hour this morning. Then later, all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. We'll hear from some of the business owners here in Five Points, too. It's just one of the best neighborhoods in town. And later in the hour, HGTV star John Gidding. He's in town for the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, WJCT is celebrating 60 years of public media on the First Coast this fall. We're going to be talking about that and much more as we come to you live from Derbion Park in Five Points, having breakfast with some fans and friends in our goodbye to summer, hello to fall block party. Here with more about the big day, we're pleased to welcome David McGowan, CEO of WJCT.
Hey. Thanks, Melissa. It's hey, great David. To be here.
Now, you know, we need to begin by pointing out you live in Riverside, so this block party is right down the street from your house.
It is, and we have so much to celebrate today. We have celebrating this great neighborhood, this fantastic day, approaching fall. I'm actually told fall will come one of these days, even to Northeast Florida. And, of course, we're celebrating 60 years of WJCT and looking forward to the next 60.
That's right. And we decided to kind of do this by not only having the block party in Five Points, but thanking our listeners and asking for their donations. Because if they come down to the neighborhood today, they're supporting us with their whatever they buy.
Absolutely. It's a really great opportunity for us to say thank you to our supporters and for them to show their support. So it's really kind of a mutual love fest that we have going here this afternoon and this morning. And we're excited about that. And I think it's really important that people recognize that this radio station belongs not only to this neighborhood, but to this entire community. We are not owned by a university, a deep-pocketed university. We are not owned by the state, like many public radio stations are. We are owned by everyone in this room, everyone in this neighborhood, everyone in this city, everyone in this region. It's a really important and crucial difference, and so we depend on your support. We're really excited to have been here for 60 years. Yeah. It's actually an incredible achievement. We should recognize that, yeah. All those who went before us. But we have a lot of plans for the next 60, and we need your help to do it.
Absolutely. You've been on the job now for about a year, not quite.
9 months.
Nine months.
Still get away with calling myself the new guy.
That's right. And as you unveil plans for the future of WJCT, which is radio, TV, digital, and community, like today.
That's right.
Continuing to be a vital part of this community in so many ways is a big part of your vision, which is really cool and exciting.
It is. You know, we've been doing television and radio for really the entirety of our history, but we know that the way people go to us and consume the content that we make and that we distribute is changing. It's changing really fast, and we need to be a part of that, and we need your help to do it.
Absolutely. So come on down to Five Points today. We have people eating breakfast with us here at Derbion Park right now, but there's going to be so much coming up later today and tonight. David McGowan, our new CEO, thanks so much for being here with us.
Thank you.
All right. David's going to go eat now. As we hear from the people who really, they had the whole idea for this big bash. We're so excited and pleased to partner with Dwayne Beliakoff and Jonathan Cobbs. They are co-owners and chefs, and Laura Edgecombe, Director of Events and Catering for the fabulous establishments Bread and Board and Derby on Park, two of many sponsors of today's Five Points Block Party. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
And Dwayne, let's start with you. You came to us a few months ago and said, I want to throw a block party for WJCT in Five Points. And now, here we are.
Here we are. I feel like, actually, the last couple months have flown by, kind of within the planning process. But for me, it was really selfish. And I've been thinking about this all morning. But I'm literally the biggest fan, I think. It's always on my radio. I canceled my Sirius. I'm just 89.9 all the way. But I drive Jonathan to the airport all the time in Orlando, and I pretty much listen to static from Daytona to Orlando, Orlando to Daytona, and catch you guys back. So I am a big fan.
We're fans of you guys, so it's a mutual admiration society, because Bread and Board and Derby and Park are just amazing places and vital partners in the Five Points community. Laura and Jonathan, we're right now all of us having breakfast at Derby and Park, but there's so much more planned today. What's on tap for today and tonight?
Well, we starting at 3 o'clock. We're actually going to shut down the street and about get everything set up and ready. We have just an evening full of fun. David's going to be spinning from the stage. We've got Be Friends Farm is coming out. We've got our friend setting up a farmer's market out here. Jamie from Bark is coming out so that your four-legged friends can come and enjoy. And it's just, there's going to be good food, there's going to be beer, there's going to be drinks. It's just going to be a fun environment. We've got, 100 hay bales coming out, just trying to set it up.
To kind of set up fall.
Yeah, just have it's supposed to be fun and relaxing and,
Laura, people need to come out anywhere in Five Points, but in particular, Margaret Street is blocked off later today, right?
So we'll be closing Margaret, like Jonathan said, at 3 o'clock, and then the actual kickoff block party starts at 6 o'clock, and we'll run till 10, maybe 11, maybe a little bit later, depending on how much fun we're all having. As Jonathan mentioned, there will be live music all evening. We're very, very fortunate. A lot of our sponsors, PRI Productions, is coming out, and they are sponsoring all the production side of it. We have a ton of product from Cisco, Bar Harbor, Manifest, Dark Horse, Cavalier, Breakthrough, Gallo Wines, Friends Farm. I know, and I could keep going. We have so many others as well, but I just wanted to throw their names out there because without them, we would not have this event today to be able to. It's everyone, it's not just us.
So many hands came together to pull this off, so thank you so much to PRI, and I will go through all the other sponsors as we go through the hour, who are donating their time and talents to this big, fun party, and especially thanks to you guys, Dwayne, Jonathan, and Laura, for coming to WJCT with this and making this party available to the whole city. A big hand for all of you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
And in a moment, it's our Friday Media Roundtable live from Five Points for WJCT's Goodbye to Summer, Hello to Fall block party. We'll be right back.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. This weekend, live from here, is coming to you from Ravinia with our guests, Parker Millsap.
I've been walking the fine line between the form and the function, between the gall and the gumption, between feeling and touching. I'm about to start swimming.
Plus the Secret Sisters, Hocktail, Tom Papa, and much more. Hope you'll join us right here this weekend.
Saturday evening at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Peter Sagal. Toad is one of the delightful characters in the Super Mario video games. And this week, the president changed that, too. Join us as we cover our eyes and yell no on this week's quiz from NPR.
WJCT's Jaguars Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back to our big WJCT block party in Five Points. Hey, everybody. All right. We are saying goodbye to summer, hello to fall, coming to you live right now from Derby on Park, right at the point of Five Points, having breakfast with some very cool people who are part of this special breakfast live broadcast. And of course, it's Friday, which means we're going to do what we always do, talk about the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable as we welcome four all-stars to the show. David Bauerlein is here, reporter for the Florida Times-Union. Hey, David.
Good morning, Melissa.
Regular contributor Charles Griggs with us once again.
Good morning, Melissa.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Good morning.
Guys, thanks so much for joining us. And there is a lot to talk about over breakfast here. Everything from big JEA news when it comes to nuclear power to another step forward in dredging the St. John's River, all of that ahead. But first this morning, a headline that really caught our eye this week, a seasoned strategist from here in Duval is jumping on board the Ron DeSantis bandwagon. Yes, Jacksonville's own Susie Wiles joining the DeSantis campaign for governor. She has been named campaign chair for DeSantis. Susie Wiles, of course, served as Rick Scott's campaign manager during his first successful run for governor, and she was senior strategist in Florida for Donald Trump. And so we kick off the roundtable with a closer look at this move. A.G. Gankarski, you broke this story. Susie Wiles, a seasoned campaign professional, she's been brought in more than once to help a Republican looking to shore up his numbers and do well in Florida. Your thoughts?
Right. 2 years ago, she was brought in to help out Donald Trump. Donald Trump was down 2 or 3 points in the polls. She's able to pull him over. This is a more challenging case. Andrew Gillum is a more exciting candidate than Hillary Clinton was in 2016. Also, DeSantis keeps making mistakes. You know, DeSantis is associated with a lot of elements that have gotten scrutiny from media, and as well, the campaign just hasn't seemed to have an adult in the room. You basically have events that media didn't get to, or events that weren't advised for media. You had messaging that was bad, and DeSantis really has not taken the campaign to Andrew Gillum. Susie Wiles is going to help with that, going to help engage volunteers also. She did that in 2016 for Trump. She hopefully, for DeSantis' sake, will do it in 2018 for DeSantis. Time will tell. You've got 6 weeks left, and he's down by almost 10 points in one poll, so it's getting late for Ron DeSantis.
It's interesting when AG talks about the adult in the room. So, you know, the DeSantis had an event here in Jacksonville the other day that the media advisory basically went out that morning for. That's just kind of basic sort of stuff where you it's not the message so much, it's just the blocking and tackling of a campaign that you can't get your message out if people don't know you're going to be in town. So making sure you do that is a key thing.
She will professionalize this campaign. It seems to be the narrative that is forming around this.
Well, part of it is the message as well, because the DeSantis campaign has not been able to nail down a specific message for the campaign itself. And they've let the Gillum campaign sort of run across the state with this energy, and they haven't been able to garner anything. The only thing that DeSantis' campaign has been able to nail is the fact that they are a Trump supporter, and that's it. That's the only way they've been able to define themselves. So, but the Gillum campaign has been able to speak out on various issues, and Susie Wiles will bring some order to this team.
Let me ask you all this as well. It was observed to me yesterday by someone who's covered politics in the city for a long time that Susie Wiles is well known around town as a thoroughly likable and intelligent and respected political operative who has helped a lot of male Republican politicians who are not as likable. So what about that dynamic?
I would agree with all the things you said about Susie. I'm not sure how she would work to actually change an image of these politicians. I mean, Rick Scott was a remarkable politician who was often polled poorly and yet won election. So I think what she is at this point, I don't think there's a big image makeover coming for Ron DeSantis. I think a lot of it is, how do they get voters to the polls? How do they organize the campaign, turnout? The things that you're talking about in terms of professionalizing the campaign.
Yeah, and you have to wonder with the DeSantis campaign. It's 2018. We are basically 10 years after the Tea Party. DeSantis was a Tea Party type of Republican. And it's looking like swing voters, women voters, they're rejecting that sort of model that emerged when Barack Obama was president and has basically taken Republicanism to now. Susie Wiles' challenge is what it was with Donald Trump, basically to translate DeSantis to where the media can understand where he's actually coming from. She was great with Trump doing that. Trump would say something ridiculous. Susie would say, well, he really meant this and actually sound plausible. She's going to have to do that again with DeSantis. But you know, here's the thing with the DeSantis team. There's not a lot of cohesion with that effort. It just feels like people are on their own islands. Who's going to have to rein them in? You know, the merging of the DeSantis and Nunez campaign for lieutenant governor, that's still in process. So Susie is going to have a come to Jesus meeting, if it hasn't happened already, and get that campaign in gear.
Let me ask you both, too, as a quick follow-up, though. The other day, Congressman DeSantis, he's actually left Congress, I should say, former Congressman DeSantis got a little bit testy with media who have been criticizing him for speaking at events that have also hosted white nationalists, for example, other ties that have been reported on with regard to supporters and donors for the DeSantis campaign that have ties to white nationalist groups. And DeSantis pushed back on reporters and said, why don't you report more fully on Andrew Gillum's associations with groups like the Dream Defenders, the Council on American Islamic Relations, Black Lives Matter, and others. And so in that sense, DeSantis was conflating white nationalism on the right with some of these groups on the left. What are your thoughts about that comparison that he made?
Right. The RGA just came out with an ad for dealing with the Dream Defenders, trying to tie him to that. And, you know, time-honored political thing to tie people to people who they've gotten endorsements from. I think there's an argument, though, that speaking before a group and being endorsed by a group are two somewhat different things.
Yeah, Charles.
And then you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go very far to see that Andrew Gillum has been pretty good at defining himself as a progressive candidate in his own right. So he doesn't need those other groups to define him. And he's been, people have been joining his bandwagon, and it hasn't been the other way around. So he's been creating that type of energy that DeSantis needs in order to get momentum going with his campaign. And the way DeSantis now is doing is sort of reaching out and saying, hey, look at what he's doing bad, instead of look at what I'm doing good.
You know, this is the thing, though. It's like Gillum was dead in the water in terms of fundraising before the August primary. The only thing that basically saved them was these third-party groups, George Soros, Tom Steyer, the Dream Defenders, and all of that. And I asked this Gillum time and time again, is your message going to be hijacked by these groups that want you to win? And you know, he was always saying, well, no, I've got my message, they've got their message. So Gillum has addressed these questions. DeSantis is playing whataboutism, which is basically saying, well, Gillum has supporters that are anti-Semitic, therefore I can have X amount of white national supporters.
What is the ratio there? Is it like,
yeah,
you get
exactly.
One, like two racists for one anti-Semite? And
yeah, I mean, that's really the question. It's like when you play whataboutism with the racial tropes, it is toxic to swing voters. It is toxic to people who aren't tied in these party architectures. And I don't know how DeSantis turns it around.
And it's also an act of desperation, too, when you have to, it shows that you haven't defined your own message when you have to go out and use someone else's, you know, define their faults, when instead of leaning into your message about how you're going to lead the state.
Gillum has done that to a remarkable degree. The most progressive candidate in the modern era to run for a statewide office and get this kind of backing and mainstream support. David Bauerlein.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, he would be the most progressive governor elected, I think, in the history of Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically staked out some progressive positions, some nationally, which are more symbolic in my view, but some at the state level where if you were elected and if you were able to get them in law, would have a large change in how Florida operates.
And arguably the DeSantis campaign hasn't really capitalized on that level of progression that they're not painting him successfully as being far outside the mainstream. I expect with Susie in there that will become a
yeah. What
a
will Susie Wiles do about that problem?
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem for DeSantis is the who do you want to have a beer with test? Do you want to have a beer with Ron DeSantis or Andrew Gillum? I think most people choose Andrew Gillum. DeSantis seems like he's sneering all the time. He seems hostile. He seems negative. These are hard things to overcome. DeSantis actually reminds me of 1950s, 1960s Richard Nixon, in that he just doesn't seem likable. He doesn't seem young. He doesn't contrast well with Gillum, who is very likable.
You're saying this is like Nixon and Kennedy in 1960?
Yeah, I am. It's like because Gillum has...
We don't have a lot of dead voters in Chicago, but it is Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not betting on the veracity of our elections, but when I look at the who do you want to have a beer with test, that's a swing voter test, that goes Gillum's way. I don't know how DeSantis turns around by saying, oh, look at this guy that you like. He's so radical.
Remember that DeSantis didn't do a very good job of retail politics. politicking during the primary. He won because of Fox News, and so the idea that you know, face-to-face connection with voters, Gillum just does way, way better.
Yeah, all right. He was underwater in his district too. At the end, there was a poll at the end of DeSantis' term, and he was actually underwater in terms of favorability rating. So a little bit of Ron DeSantis may go a long way for some voters.
Let me just jump in and say, what's it like for you guys to talk about the news while everyone's eating breakfast and watching you?
About the same.
Let's do this every week. I have coffee. So
wouldn't it be weird if you did this every day? This is so odd,
couldn't you bring breakfast to the studio for us?
Where's our Jill Nooney call?
I'll work on that. I'll talk to Dwayne and Jonathan. Maybe we can work this out in trade with Derby on Park. And by the way, thanks again to Derby on Park, Bread and Board, and everyone in 5 Points, PRI Productions, and many more sponsors who I will name before the end of this hour for today's live broadcast of First Coast Connect, kicking off our WJCT block party in 5 Points. If you're just tuning in, the streets close at 3 o'clock today and the merriment begins. Get on down to 5 Points today and tonight for this big, big bash. Okay, let's talk about some other headlines from the week. A controversial nuclear power project going ahead in Georgia, according to the TU, despite strong objections from JEA. The TU reports that local ratepayers here in town, all of us, will actually be on the hook for subsidizing the only active nuclear power project in the U.S., Plant Vogtle. Now, despite a slew of cost increases and delays, the directors of the Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia are plowing ahead with expanding nuclear power in East Georgia. JEA is tied into this because they're obligated from a 10-year-old purchase power agreement to help build and eventually buy power from these nuclear reactors. David Bauerlein, your colleague Nate Monroe has been leading on this reporting. JEA is suing over this. There is a countersuit, as the lawyers tend to win out in these things. Us, the ratepayers, probably do not. So is it fair to call this a boondoggle for JEA?
Well, I'm not sure it's fair to call it a boondoggle. And Nate has done a really great job covering this report day in and day out. I mean, what it is kind of like any other commercial venture. Maybe you're building a big apartment building, and halfway through it's going to cost you a lot more than you think it would. And you go, do I finish this off, even though the rents aren't going to be as, the revenue's not going to be what I thought, or do I cut my losses and just stop building? And that's really what this debate is about. Is it time to cut losses and say, okay, we're going to spend a lot of money and not get a volt of electricity out of this plant, or do we go through knowing that it's going to cost a lot more than we expected? Might put some pressure down the year on rates down to years, but let's finish it off. And there's a lot of back and forth about alternatives and agreements, but it's definitely going to cost more. I wouldn't go so far as to call it a boondoggle yet.
I call it a money pit. I mean, the Business Journal has really been delving into the details of the contract and how all of this came together. Ratepayers could be looking at a 15 to 30% increase in the amount that it costs JEA to actually buy electricity. That would pass through to consumers. The issue isn't just that there's a bunch of sunk costs, it's that the electricity that will be generated from it costs more than the electricity they could buy in the open market otherwise. Mm-hmm. With the added wrinkle that if they do stop construction, the federal government can demand loans being repaid pretty much immediately that otherwise would go 20 or 30 years, they could be paid back over. So JEA has been fighting this really, really hard. There was several votes of the four owners of the plant this week that seemed like maybe it would end the deal, but eventually they decided to actually just move ahead.
This is such a bad look for JEA. I mean, this is horrible. I mean, you had JEA go up against all these Georgia power companies, against the governor of Georgia, basically saying this deal needs to go through. JEA had no backup from Rick Scott in that. JEA had no backup from Lenny Curry over at Leon. It was just JEA against the world, and the world won. And this has been a really bad year for JEA coverage, from the privatization initiative that is going to be used in one of these state house races going on right now. You have a lobbyist for JEA sale running for House District 15 because Democrat Tracy Polson is going to be there. But, you know, when you look at JEA over the last year, they have basically overstepped over and over again. And I don't know how they get confidence back, not just to people in Jacksonville, but of the credit rating agencies.
That's the challenge. I mean, when you talk about no political backup, that's important because legally, yeah, JEA is stuck with this. The contract is horrendous. It literally says there is no way to get out of this contract. If you sign a contract that says there is no way to get out of this contract, going to court isn't going to help. politically, they can maybe come to an agreement.
Yeah, but the thing is that when you look back when this deal was done, not only are they should be suing.
It's a 10-year-old deal.
It's a 10-year-old deal, but people should be held accountable for this. I mean, it's a bad deal. I mean, it's a bad deal.
And how about the fact, going beyond JEA's woes, looking at the issue of the power grid, this is the only active nuclear project in America.
Seemed like a good idea in 2008.
Right. What a difference a decade makes. Exactly.
And pre-fracking, actually, they were, but times have changed. That's why we don't sign a contract that says we're going to pay for this no matter what forever.
But there's always an out clause. I mean, if you got an attorney, somebody's got to wait for you to get out of the deal, and that wasn't done here. And especially in light of the fact that many people believe that they didn't have the authority to make the deal in the first place.
Well, I don't know if many people believe that. The authority's arguing that.
But. And we will all be on the hook for the additional costs, the specifics of which, David Bauerlein, you'll have to fill me in on. If it's been broken down, what individual ratepayers will shoulder for this.
Well, Tim seemed to have some idea in terms of what the additional costs are. Now, there's other ways that they can manage their affairs, they can reduce their debt without having an increase
to
in
pass
rates.
It on.
But it means that they're not able to do other things because they have this large cost that's going to be coming onto the books that they have to account for.
Right. The cost that JEA would pay to buy energy would go up. So, you know, what that means for ratepayers, some of that increase would obviously be passed on. But, you know, if they can cut costs other places, you know, that increase would be less than the 15% to 30%.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, these deals are not unusual. I mean, if you're going to build like a multi-billion-dollar plant, you're not going to let people say, yeah, I'll buy power from you, and then 10 years later say, I changed my mind.
No. Right. You know,
that's the whole point, is you're all in, and these are written in a way that says, they use the term hell or high water.
Yeah.
Come hell or high water, you're paying for this.
The Georgia company who JEA has the contract with says they would not have entered into building the plant if they didn't have this contract with JEA. So from their standpoint, of course JEA has to keep on paying, otherwise they wouldn't have even gone down this path.
All right, and as we keep talking about the news, let's just acknowledge this really happy breakfast crowd at Derby on Park.
Yay!
How's everybody's breakfast? Isn't it delicious?
Yeah.
Totally delicious. I had some earlier. Let's keep eating, talking, and chewing over the news, because also this week, the Army Corps of Engineers on Tuesday was awarded a contract for the second phase of a dredging project to deepen the St. Johns River. This contract of about $200 million is about half funded, but work on the 5-mile stretch of river, deepening it down to a depth of 47 feet to allow for bigger cargo ships, that work is scheduled to begin in December. They are moving ahead with the dredging despite questions about the cost, the environmental impact, and whether expansion will bring the promised jobs. David Bauerlein. It's full steam ahead at this point, though, for the dredging.
Absolutely. For the Army Corps and Jacksonville Port Authority, they have the money. They're doing it. It's moving forward. I think it's going to be an interesting issue, I believe, in the next spring city elections, because it does look like at some point the city of Jacksonville is going to have to put up some of the money. So then it becomes not just, well, the federal government's paying for it, the state's paying for it. It starts to be, okay, is this something that's going to affect the city's budget? Are we going to put up money as a city to pay for this large-scale dredge project?
And quite honestly, once you're, you know, it's three phases, so you have miles 1 through 3, 5 through 8, and 9 through 11. And once you're, you know, have the federal and state government paying for 1 through 8, going to the city and saying, you know, what are you going to do now? Say no? Then you have a deeper river that serves no purpose.
That serves no purpose.
Yes.
Once you're halfway across the desert,
right? Yeah, keep on walking.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
I think the public perception is that this should now be the opportunity to discuss that, where that funding is going to come from, and that hasn't been happening. You know, how are we going to fund this down the road, especially with some potential challenges for funding for the city in the near future?
The problem is that conversation. I mean, I always find it interesting looking at public conversations that come up way too late. You see, with like any road project that's done, there'll be a public conversation 4 years before the road is, you know, even planned out. And then at the point where they're about to break ground, the public comes, oh, wait, they're doing this thing. It's like, no, it's too late. That ship has sailed. We're moving on. The idea of trying to stop the city government for paying for this now,
They need to figure out a way to get, because they're going to need to find the money because the project's underway. It's not like they're going to stop.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump keeps printing money. I mean, Donald Trump, like, pours money into everything. So, you know, as long as you have the Curry-Trump axis, you might get some more federal money coming in.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to go to Trump and say, let's put more money to boost international trade. Yeah, we want more containers coming from China, so dredge the St. John's River.
You're looking for rhetorical consistency from Donald Trump. I mean, he's proven willing to spend on anything.
And the city's got to have some skin in the game as well. You know, so they've been getting money from the state.
It could be, though, I think if it gets to a debate within the city council, the political races, then it becomes a question. I agree with everybody that at that point, there is going to be a consensus to move forward. Why waste all the money that's been done? But there's been this debate that's been going on about the environmental mitigation. Is that part of the discussion? Yes, the city will put up money, but...
Not enough to satisfy environmental groups, of course, like the St. John's Riverkeeper and others.
That could well be. But then that conversation is had, which hasn't been had so far, because the State Department of Transportation has not been interested in paying for environmental mitigation. The federal government has not been... If the city's involved, does that become part of the discussion at least?
Okay, and also moving forward, City Councilman Terrence Freeman. Freeman having a good week because a lawsuit that challenged his appointment to the council by Governor Scott has been dismissed by a Duval County Circuit Judge. Freeman was appointed by the governor back in July to replace former Councilman Reginald Brown. Actually, he's a suspended councilman. He was indicted along with another officeholder, Katrina Brown, on fraud charges. Freeman has moved forward, and by the way, Jacoby Pittman of Clara White Mission, also appointed by the governor, took over Katrina Brown's seat. So the loop has closed on that whole flap, Charles.
Yeah, the loop is closed. Looks like he'll get a chance to continue his work in the community. Freeman's been out actually doing town hall meetings in his district, trying to get to know the districts and so forth. The question will be, will he be able to get anything done before the term is over, and will he choose to run for re-election? To that seat.
For an actual election, right? He was appointed. And this is District 10, and the big accusation was that he didn't live in the district.
Yeah, I mean, District 10 is about 20% Republican. He's a Republican. He moved from Mandarin for the seat.
Because Mandarin is just like District 10.
Well, I mean, for the purposes of Rick Scott and city leaders, it basically was. I mean, they moved him right before the swearing-in ceremony. And there was really no drama in this because the judge said that even if he were to throw Freeman out of office, the cure could be just reappointing Freeman because he'd established residency over there. So there was no surprise to this. I don't know how much Terrence Freeman actually gets done in the next 6 months. The city budget's already passed. There might be some appropriations bills. I don't know how he gets a campaign going either. Even though there are like 10 people running in District 10 right now, I don't know if he can overcome party ID. I don't know if he's taken as a sincere person. And you have to wonder what Terrence Freeman's end game is, if he might run for at-large or something like that. I don't see him winning in District 10.
I think that's actually the key question, because there's only so much you can build a base when you just move to an area. You've been appointed. Even if you're having town halls, even if you're meeting with people, it's not like you're going to suddenly become part of the community, and the value of incumbency isn't there the same way it is in other appointments.
But if you have political aspirations and there's a crack in the door, you're going to put your foot through that crack.
He's been so thirsty to be in office for a long time. He finally got there. Kudos. But, you know, winning elections is a different thing.
But both of them, he and Jacoby Pittman, and both have a tough road because they're basically placeholders. And while Pittman may decide to run for that seat, yeah, it would be up in the. It'll be interesting to see if Terrence Freeman decides to run for that seat, because he would have to overcome a lot in order to win.
All right. Well, this is normally the point of the broadcast when we talk about Only in Florida, but all we're going to say today is Only in Florida is the Media Roundtable doing their thing live from Derby on Park. Guys, I hope you stay for some breakfast. You worked hard for it. So thank you, A.G. Gankarski, Charles Griggs, Tim Gibbons, and David Beierlein, four of the best analysts and journalists you will ever meet. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back live from Derby on Park in 5 points.
An All Things Considered story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody.
Whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
Weekday afternoons from 4 to 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Discover new music at the Electro Lounge Monday through Saturday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. We've got your chill. Tune in and enjoy fresh music from around the world.
great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great... that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Ira Flatow. When did you first get captivated by science? Astronaut Leland Melvin says his interest was sparked literally when his mother gave him a chemistry set.
You know, I created this explosion. I burned her carpet. She ran in the room and, you know, I got a spanking, but my brain was activated to science.
Activate your brain to science on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to our live broadcast saying goodbye to summer and hello to fall at Derby on Park in Five Points. Hey! I'm Melissa Ross, and we are live for a special breakfast broadcast this morning to kick off our first ever block party in Five Points. It's going all day and all night. The streets close at 3 o'clock today. The stage goes up, and all sorts of amazing things are going to start happening. You know, this is such an amazing neighborhood with incredible businesses and incredible people. We're talking to three of them right now as we welcome Gunnell Humphreys, owner of Edge City, Lindsay Anderson from Sunray Cinema, and Kelly Pickard, co-owner of Alewife and president of the Five Points Merchants Association. Ladies, good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Yes. All right. Kelly, let's begin with you. You're president of the Five Points Merchants Association, and so many businesses have contributed to today. So first off, thanks for that. This is such a vibrant neighborhood, and it's getting better all the time. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with this neighborhood right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that makes Five Points so special are the businesses that have been here for years, like Gunnell and Edge City, and just the combination of retail and restaurants and drinking. And you've got those old establishments that have been here forever, but consistently bringing in new small businesses. And I think Lindsay and Gunnell can speak to it, but there's a sense of community with the businesses around here. Everyone wants to see the neighborhood succeed. And so it's a great feeling and network to be a part of.
Now, Gunnell, you're a legend in this neighborhood. You have owned Edge City in Five Points since 1976. That's amazing. Well. It is so hard to keep a small business going. What's your secret for all these years in Five Points?
I'll just be there as long as the customer keep coming.
Now, when you first got here, it was a very different neighborhood back in the Carter administration.
Yes, yeah. We were totally the renegades. They never thought we would last at all.
Were you too edgy for...
We were too edgy.
Edge
absolutely.
City was too edgy.
I don't think that people even really figured out what we were doing, you know, so...
Did you get a lot of funny looks and questions?
Oh,
and
well, I just thought that we didn't belong there, you know. We had Riverside Gown Shop next door and Five Points Man Shop across the street and Accra Brothers, and it was just very, very conservative, basically.
Okay, but the neighbor, you were ahead of your time, but the neighborhood caught up with you, didn't it?
It's amazing. We were like the first unisex store in Jacksonville, or maybe even the first little boutique independently owned like this.
That sold to both men and women.
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't know what happened. One day we were just mobbed, and people just bought these skinny glasses and skinny ties, and it was it was just amazing. But
I remember the skinny tie era. That was a good era. I liked that era.
They were so skinny, they started curling around.
Well, whether it's Gunnell, who's been here since 76, or young people flooding this neighborhood, you know, let's talk about the fact that a new study shows zip code 32204, right where we're sitting in Five Points, is the most packed zip code in Florida with millennials. This
is
a millennial magnet.
That is just amazing.
So what I think is so great about this neighborhood, Lindsay, is that all ages feel welcome here, but especially young people are flocking to Five Points and to 32204.
How are you seeing that at Sunray Cinema? Because you're programming around that at the cinema.
We are. trying to use Sunray Cinema as a basis to bring in people that want to see the big blockbuster movies, but also want to see something that's interesting. The smaller documentaries has been a great documentary year for us with RBG and the Mr. Rogers documentary. And so Sunray Cinema is a great hub for Five Points, not just from the marquee that's very iconic, but also to present an idea for a different way to spend your day. You can spend an entire day in Five Points and never be bored. So you can go see a movie, or you can go see live music, or you can go enjoy a beer, or go buy some eclectic clothing. It's a wonderful neighborhood.
Kelly Pickard, what about that study ranking the zip codes in the 30 largest U.S. cities by the overall number of millennial renters? That had to be good news for you at the Five Points Merchants Association. So many young professionals want to be here.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. But I think what draws people, it's what drew us here, wanting to open a business. I think particularly whether you've lived in Florida or if you've lived elsewhere, there's a feeling when you walk into Five Points, there's this density, there's this diversity. It seems to be that area of Jacksonville that kind of accepts everything. Yeah. And whether it's, whoever you are, it just has that feeling of accepting everything, and you can spend an entire day here. And I think that's what younger people are, younger and older people are looking for. They're looking for that kind of inclusive environment.
Ganell, do new business owners come to you for advice?
Yes, they do.
What do they ask you? You're one of them.
Okay. Yes. For many, many years, they have.
What do you tell them?
You can always tell them the truth, and it's not easy, and you got to like what you do and stick to it.
That's key to life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, in addition to your wonderful businesses, Edge City, Sunray Cinema, and the Five Points Merchants Association, our block party today in Five Points is coming to the community by virtue of so many amazing people and companies. I'm going to quickly name them and thank them. PRI Productions, Cisco, Bar Harbor, Manifest Distilling, Dark Horse Wine, Breakthrough Beverage Florida, Cavalier Distributing, Gallo Wines, Sun King Brewery, Bee Friends Farm, Bark on Park, Saturnina Trading, Derby on Park, and the Bread and Board. And thanks so much to Kelly Pickard. She's co-owner of Alewife, president of the Five Points Merchants Association. Also with us, Lindsay from Sunray Cinema, and Ganell from Edge City. Ladies, I hope you're going to stay and party with us all through the day and night and enjoy this wonderful transition to fall and celebrating 60 years of public broadcasting as well in Jacksonville. How about a big hand for these great people that make it all happen in Five Points? Thank you so much. And more in a moment as we are live from Derby on Park in Five Points for the WJCT Block Party. The streets close at 3 o'clock today. There's going to be a live stage with the Willow Wax performing. David Luckin will be spinning. It'll be an extended electro lounge into the night. Lots of drinks, food, fun. You got to come out to Five Points today and be part of the party. In a moment, we're going to tell you a little bit more about what's going to be happening and also speak to HGTV star John Gitting. He's here. We'll be right back.
Heritage Publishing produces the annual Healthcare Guide, a comprehensive directory of healthcare providers in Jacksonville and Northeast Florida. The guide provides opportunities for local businesses to reach the healthcare providers as well as the general public. HeritagePublishingInc.com for information.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. A company's cell phone policy can protect your employees and your bottom line. Our distracted driving presentation for the workforce can help.
Learn more at WayneHogan.law.
On the next Fresh Air, Robert Redford. He's announced that he's retiring from acting and that his role in his new film, The Old Man and the Gun, will be his last. We'll listen back to my 2013 interview with him about his early career in Hollywood and the movies that made him a star. I hope you'll join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we'll talk about war and peace in a warming world with not enough water to go around. Plus, capturing clouds that form 50 miles up in the sky. Have you ever seen a blue cloud? And air pollution may affect fetal development more than just the lungs. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
After a day of testimony from Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, who has accused him of sexual assault, senators next meet to decide whether his nomination will move forward.
I don't think it should go ahead. I think that there's enough questions raised today. We have other witnesses. Take a couple weeks. We're talking about a lifetime appointment.
The latest this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
From Derby on Park in Five Points on this beautiful Friday. We have an incredible crowd having breakfast with us here, this special breakfast broadcast as we kick off our goodbye to summer, hello to fall block party in Five Points. Come on down now. WJCT has mugs, t-shirts, water bottles, lots of fun stuff that you can pick up if you want to join the party now. The street will close behind us at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and lots of food and drinks and live music will then begin, a live performance from the Willow Wax and more. We're going to tell you all about that in just a moment. But first, we also want to mention that the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show is going on now and through the weekend at the Prime Osborne. Home improvement ideas, interior design tips, a cooking stage, hot new products, and some celebrities. One of them is John Gidding. Got a lot of fans here, John. Fans of HGTV will recognize John from shows like Curb Appeal and Curb Appeal The Block. He's also now one of the stars of TLC's reboot of Trading Spaces, and he joins us now. Hey, John, good to see you.
Hi, it's so good to be here.
It's so good to have you, and people just love your expertise and charisma on these shows. It's really exciting to have you in town. What are you going to be talking about at the Home and Patio stage?
At the Home Show. I'm really excited. This is a new presentation I've got going. Typically, I talk about Curb Appeal just because it's one of these things that everybody's dealing with, how your house looks from the front. And I'll always mention some quick tips and tricks about how you can immediately improve your curb appeal. But my main thrust these days is how to live in art. So that includes buying art, positioning art in your house, having intent with art, and also using your interior design in an artistic way.
Did you study that in college? I am told you worked your way through Harvard and Yale as a cover boy model for Harlequin romance novels.
You know,
you're the guy that posed on the cover of these books.
I let me immediately dispel this notion that you get paid well doing that.
But you had on like a puffy, flowery shirt, and you're that guy on
many
the Harlequin.
Many chemises. I had, you know, the scabbards.
That must have been incredible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. Someone just brought me. Here, Liz. Here we have a Harlequin novel, and it's entitled The Rake's Revenge. And you, John Gidding, are posed on the cover with this girl in a bodice-ripping type dress.
You know, can I just tell you, when we shoot the covers for this, the photographer gives us the story of the book a little bit.
He'll
be like, this is the scene where the rake
that's you
is about to violate this woman's honor.
Oh my gosh.
But before he does, he gives her a pearl necklace, and this is that scene.
Oh my gosh. That must have been hysterical and odd.
Hysterical,
doing that.
Odd, and you know what? $150 later, because that's how much these covers
that's what
pay.
You got paid?
Yeah.
But that paid for a few beers at Harvard.
Exactly.
Okay, so how did you go from Harvard to being this TV star?
You know, it was random, actually. I was doing some modeling, and one of these castings ended up being for a television show called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Right. The original one?
The original.
Okay.
And when I was just coming out of the closet, this wasn't something that my mother would have wanted me to do. So the same producers were producing something else called Knock First. And it was a design show. So my first job out of Harvard was actually doing a design television show for kids.
How funny is that? And here you are now. Trading Spaces still as popular as ever. That's got to feel good.
You know, it was one of those shows that really brought design to television. I used to watch it all the time. In fact, I used to get in line and get the autographs of the people that used to be on the show. And now I get to be part of the new cast.
Very exciting. Well, people, everybody needs to come out and see you. It's today and tomorrow at the Home and Patio Show.
Yeah, I'll be there today at 5 and then tomorrow twice. I talk about all sorts of fun tips and tricks. And if anybody has any home projects, they should really come by. There's a lot of innovation going on there. Well, and one last thing. If you buy your tickets online and use my name, J-O-H-N, you get 50% off.
Oh, very nice. John Gitting, everybody. Have fun. This is too funny. The Rake's Revenge. I'm going to have to take a picture of that later. Another Harlequin cover boy is our own David Luckin, of course. Yeah, it's well known that you paid your way through college in this same fashion.
I was his understudy.
Actually, you're our station manager, a long overdue and very well-deserved promotion. You are also our music director, and you're going to be part of an incredible amount of music at the Block Party in Five Points today and tonight. It's so exciting.
We'll start spinning as soon as we wrap here. We're going to sit right out here on the front porch of Derby on the Park, and we'll play music, and when they set up the stage at 3, we will be there, and we'll do Electro Lounge live from 8 to 10. So come on out.
The Willow Wax are performing live, too, right?
The most important part. Yeah, better than me. The Willow Wax will be here.
Not better than you, but exciting.
They will play all their great music, and that's reason enough to come out. And, of course, the reason to come out is to support public broadcasting all across the First Coast.
That's right. If you come out to the Block Party in Five Points today, tonight, you're helping support public radio and 60 more years of public media here on the First Coast. Again, a special thanks to Bread and Board, Derby on Park, PRI Productions, and many more sponsors, including the Five Points Merchants Association, who are making the Block Party possible. We couldn't do it without them. Be Friends Farm, Bark on Park, Manifest Distilling, Cisco, Gala Wines, and many, many more. Thanks to them. Thanks to you, David Luckin. Thanks to everyone for coming out to the breakfast today. Wasn't it good? Yes. Come and join us at the Block Party today. You can come and get WJCT swag right now. If you come out later today, Margaret Street will be closed. Amazing vendors, hay bales, food, fun, and music. Come join the party, everybody. Thanks, everyone, for being part of this show. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next. Make sure to catch our new statewide program, the Florida Roundup, at 1 o'clock today. See you at the party.